okay? If you afraid, then come on with me. And I know what you came here to do. Now, let me see you get loose. It's going down for real.
Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford here on ESPN 850 WKNR. Jim Donovan in for Nathan Segura today. Happy to be back with Matt Wilhelm,
yes,
who is happy to be back on land.
I am happy to be back on land. And you know what? Just walking around this Browns building, I find myself from time to time still not having it all together. My equilibrium still being off.
All right. None of this, none of that feeling, none of that vertigo feeling has anything to do with the new logo, the brown face mask, the new powerful, bolder tint of orange on the Browns helmet, and the upcoming uniform unveiling on April 14th. None of that figures into the feeling that he has. He truly had an experience at sea, folks. Not out on the lake. At sea, as part of the Buckeye cruise that was supposed to come in and hit land when?
We hit land last night at 7 p.m.
But when were you originally scheduled?
7 a.m. Monday morning.
Okay.
So,
all right. So you were, but you were trapped out there because of, you were literally, you know, out on the water because of?
So Monday morning, as we expected to wake up at 6 a.m. to, you know, get off the boat by 7, because they had to load another cruise, another 2,000 people on that boat by 1 p.m. that day.
Were Auburn fans that were waiting to get on the Tiger class?
Yeah, they were.
The Tiger cruise?
Exactly. And we look out, you look out your window, and there is fog everywhere, and we are bobbing, which means we're not moving. We are bobbing at sea with no land in sight, of course, because of the fog. And then you're able to turn on your television and track, just like you can track a flight. And you can tell we were 4 hours from port. So then, again, hour by hour, the captain of the ship comes on and explains exactly why we're not moving and how long it's going to take. And it was just an absolute mess. But I will tell you this. As I was explaining to you before we jumped on air, the cool thing about it was, as you were kind of waiting for some type of good news to change your travel plans about, you know, what flight you're going to get on out of Tampa or Orlando to get back to wherever it is you flew in from, the second the captain confirmed that we were staying another night, everyone's mood totally changed. The drinks started flowing again. The music got turned up. And it was absolutely, again, the Buckeye cruise went right back into effect.
Wow. So once again, he was on a cruise with all the Buckeye greats.
Yes.
And also head coach Urban Meyer.
Yes.
Okay. And it was a fundraiser, not only to have a lot of fun and celebrate a national championship and be around the great players of the past and of the great rich history of Ohio State football, but to also raise a ton of money.
Ton of money.
Okay. For cancer research under the title of Urban and his wife, Shelley.
Yes.
As they have this foundation to help, you know, explore some possible cures and help and assistance in battling cancer, which is incredible.
Yes.
And that's great. But you were out there and you're literally at sea. And did you get claustrophobic at all? Because I was on a cruise that had none of these problems.
Yes.
Okay. And I got claustrophobic.
I did not get the one time I got claustrophobic was and I explained this to my wife. It's like just, you know, showering in a phone booth to me. And there was, I literally, both of my shoulders were touching the walls
of
the shower.
Or as they might say, Matt, showering at the old Cleveland Stadium.
Yeah, that's right. didn't get so seasick, so claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. They kept the party going, and there was it was amazing. And the great thing that I can say is, the two individuals that put on the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer each and every year, Chris Quinn and Lisa Sisko, did an amazing job. And I have to give props to Buckeye fans because I know they hold back. There's 2 days at sea, Jim, which is our only obligations between also one evening event where we have to sign autographs for everybody on the boat.
Right.
And everybody's limited to one autograph.
Oh.
And I'll give it up to Buckeye fans. With 40 of your great Buckeyes walking around, it would be so easy to ask for an additional autograph or take another picture or so on and so forth. The people were amazing. So when from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock, we signed. When it was over, It was over. Yeah. And you were able to enjoy and be with your family. And again, communicate with the Buckeye fans and relive the 2002 championship team and this year's team. But it was an absolute blast, and it was a blessing for me to finally be invited. And what I've been told is if you can behave on this cruise, which I did, you'll get invited back and you're grandfathered in until they stop doing this Buckeye cruise and cancer in some cases has been resolved.
Yeah, well, that would be the ultimate goal.
Yes, it would.
Well, that's great. That's good that you're back. Now,
thank
there's
you.
Been a heck of a lot going on.
I know, and I've tried to keep abreast. I've tried to stay on top of it. With limited Wi-Fi.
All right, I want to give my opinion on this thing, okay? And I certainly gave it on the television, okay? I like everything they've done. I really do. And it's not because, you know, I broadcast their games or anything like that. Okay. I don't think that their intention was to have a, hey, stop the world, stop the presses moment yesterday to reveal their new logo, which really in many ways is a letterhead for them.
Correct.
Okay. On stationery and everything like that. And to take a new look at the celebration of the 30th anniversary of the Great Dog Pound with a pretty cool, you know, I like the logo there and the new look of the helmet with the brown face mask. But I don't think the Browns are that gluttonous with coverage that they really wanted to make a big deal of this. But I think it had gotten out that there was a new look coming, and the Browns made it very clear it wasn't the uniforms. There's a definite
right.
date on that, and that's April 14th. But okay, if it's gotten out, then let's address it. Let's take a look at it. So if many people take a shot at them because they're saying, hey, listen, why did you have a media event for this and I'm only looking at a different shade of orange, I think that's a cheap shot. Okay, I really do, because I don't think that was the intent. I think the fact of the matter is that they are covered in such a blanket way,
yes,
around
are.
The area, by television, by radio, by social media, by print media, obviously, by national media now, that everything they do is under a microscope. And so then I think they had a moment. They had, you know, all right, so Alex Shiner went out, he addressed it and said more to come, and we look forward to what's going to happen in April when we show you the new uniform. So I think that you can take a shot at them about that they're not winning, okay? You can take a shot at them right now that they're once again sitting here, deja vu all over again, and they're wondering where their next quarterback is going to be.
Sure.
Is he in the building today, or is he where the heck is he? Is he in rehab? Is he somewhere else? Is he on a college campus getting ready for a pro day? Okay, you can take a shot at them for that. You can take a shot at them if you didn't like what they did in the first round last year. But to say they were gluttonous and to say that they really wanted to suck up the media attention yesterday, I can't do that to them. I got to give them a pass on that. I think what they did was it got out there. They wanted to address it. They stayed in formation with the information, and they updated it and made it, you know, rather than being gossip, they made it fact. And I think that's it.
I do too.
And I like the look of it.
I do too. I like the look of it. And you know what it really feels like to me, Jim, is with every new regime that comes in or new coaching staff comes in, everyone's always pitching the process. You know, well, it's a process. And I think that this is the Cleveland Browns' best way of Jimmy Haslam and everyone below creating that new look, that new mantra, that play like a Brown mentality, and changing this logo as minute as it might be.
Yeah.
And changing, you know, the Dog Pound logo as well, as you said, as well as the font and so on and so forth, is part of the process to help Jimmy Haslam and this team and organization fulfill their end goal of consistent winning and have a proud product and be a true representation of the Cleveland Browns and the Dog Pound.
Okay, so I cannot wait to see the uniform. Okay,
yes.
On April 14th. And you know what? If we want to go red carpet on that and and bring people
down. It's a big deal. Fashion show.
The fashion police. And I anticipate that. I really do. As I said to you, I've talked to the equipment guys here for many years and have asked them about, you know, uniforms. How do you select what they're going to wear for that particular Sunday? You know, is it if it's really hot and it's early in the year and you're at home, do you want to wear the all white? Things like that. Have you ever thought, you know, the Browns a few years ago, you know, a couple of regimes ago, I think, went and wore white
all year,
home and away,
yes.
Remember. So, it's amazing how people will be very sensitive to the uniform, not just the helmet, but the uniform, and I get that. But if you're going to take a shot at them about, why did they gather the media together, well, I think then, you know, they would have taken equally as much heat if they didn't bring
Correct.
The media together.
Exactly.
So they're damned if they do, and they're damned if they don't.
You're right, Jim, and I think, you know what? I think the Cleveland Browns, you know, there's not been a whole lot of great to talk about in the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And to them, this felt like something monumental about that as a piece of that process
yeah.
that is going to change you know, the momentum of this organization over the past 15 years. They feel like that steamroll effect has started with Pettine and Farmer and seven wins and Jimmy Haslam as an owner and the renovation at the stadium, that doing this is a big deal for Cleveland, Northeast Ohio, and the Browns organization.
Okay. These are our Ohio Business Machine hot topics, and it is a hot topic. And as Jason Gibbs, our producer, told us just moments before we came on the air, it was a very hot topic yesterday, and not just on this show, but everywhere you went. Everywhere you went. I just stopped off at Dunkin' Donuts before we came down here, right there on Bagley Road. And because of that mention, I should end up with a bottomless cup, I think, of coffee. Anyway, and I walked in there, Matt, to, you know, to get a cup of coffee, and that's everybody, hey, what do you think of the new helmet? Yeah. What do you think? Oh, and that's it, okay? And I get that, okay? So if you want to call into the show here today and talk about the logo, we can definitely do that.
216-578-0850.
Thanks. You know that much more by heart than
yes,
I do.
Yes, I do.
Thank you. Also, and you've heard that Matt is back on land, and that's very, very important, all right? Here's the other thing. The other night, I got the call that Ted Ginn had been cut in Arizona, and he's a free agent. Ted Ginn Jr.
Yes.
And I immediately went on the news at 11 o'clock, on the sports segment, at 11 o'clock, and I said, hey, this one's easy. This one's easy. He wants to play here. He's wanted to play here all throughout his whole life. He wanted to be drafted here, but he was drafted in Miami. Okay, when he was going to leave Miami, I think he wanted to come here, you know, for his second stop.
Yeah.
Okay, and that didn't
Carolina,
happen.
I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Then he had a very good year the year Carolina went to the playoffs.
Did.
I thought he was very effective for them. And, of course, he's a lightning rod as a returner still.
Yes.
And I thought, again, you know, he's out there. We needed receivers, and God knows we didn't know how much we needed them, but we needed them. And then I was all in on getting them again, and then – you know, we didn't get him again, and now he's out there again. Now, when the Browns went drop back into punt return formation last year, was that not brutal to watch?
It was.
It was brutal to watch, and it became more of a defensive thing than any kind of an offensive, aggressive play for them. I mean, it got to the point, and I love Jim Leonard. I thought Jim Leonard was a great pro and, just a character guy.
A great player filling in for so long.
I would love to see him come back.
Yes.
I mean, I really did. But, you know, we really conceded on the punt returns through most of the year last year because Benjamin was tentative and he had dropped a couple. He was indecisive.
Jordan Poyer in the Jacksonville game.
Poyer had that ball hit him in the face or in the visor.
Yep.
Okay. You know, you had other guys that went back there that weren't successful. The only guy that never went back there was Gilbert. But then they really kind of – even Leonard dropped one in Cincinnati in the Thursday night game. But still, we just got to a point where we wanted to catch punts.
Yes.
We caught punts.
You're right. And I was an advocate for catching punts because of all the flubs.
You were an advocate of
I was, because I thought for us as an organization, securing the ball, you know, was the most pinnacle play in a football game, because an opportunity to gain 10 yards, which is an additional first down, which is why at this point I would be in favor of Ted Ginn, as I said yesterday on my call-in from the boat at sea, because he can make those type of plays if the number is right to bring him here. But I was an advocate for Jim Leonard because I thought what we had seen and that carousel of guys that would try to return punts did not work in the favor of the Cleveland Browns. But I thought Jim Leonard going out there and either fair catching the ball, securing it, and or getting 5 yards in a cloud of dust would be enough for the Cleveland Browns. Just to know that Brian Hoyer or Johnny Manziel, whoever was at quarterback, ran out that next to take the possession.
Yeah. Okay. I understand that. I mean, I think that's a safety net way to play.
Very much so.
The only thing is, you robbed yourself of any potential of getting field position.
You're right.
Okay. And when they became tentative at it, that to me was more frightening than them possibly dropping the ball. And I want to go back to the Baltimore game that they lost early in the year. And I believe I'm right about this, and you can call into the show if I'm wrong about this. Late in the game, Benjamin went back, and there was a punt that went to him, and he was just inside his – might have been right at the 20 or maybe at the 18. He let it go over his head because he wasn't sure. And I think he had bobbled one earlier in the game.
Yes, you're right.
All right. And so he had had a hiccup earlier in the game, and the ball went over his head, and they ended up starting like at their 6 or 7 yard line. Now, all they needed was a first down. Okay, so that's 10 yards whether you're at the 6 or at your 7 or you're at their 6 or at their 7, all right? But the fact of the matter is, late in the ball game like that, I thought it really changed their play calling.
I do too.
That they were that hemmed in, and it was because of the tentative decision-making back there. It wasn't that he dropped it. It wasn't that he made a – that he caught it and went backwards. I mean, he didn't know if he wanted to catch it.
Right. And it's also, too, I mean, at that point, Kyle Shanahan, you call a different play at the 6-yard line than you do at the 18-yard line.
Right. Now, they didn't get the first down.
You're right.
They ended up punting. Lanning is way back by his goal line. Baltimore got the ball because they had Jacoby Jones
back there.
At about
the 50.
At about the 50. They're right on the old orange helmet with the gray face mask
yes.
on it. They get a penalty on Gilbert. They hit the pass over on the right side, to Steve Smith, I think.
Yep.
And the next thing, that guy's hitting a chip shot, and we're all going walking out of there with a loss.
You're absolutely right. And how many? There were multiple times.
There were multiple times
that you can say that we missed out on opportunities. And again, even I think I recall late in the season, you know, Benjamin and that special teams group returning the football. You know, I think Benjamin went for multiple 15-plus yard returns.
He did.
And it was great to see.
I think it might have been, like, against Indianapolis.
Yeah, you might be correct. But it was so great to see because it flips the field.
It does flip the field.
And you have to have that. And that's the asset that we hope you could acquire in a guy like Ted Ginn just to play that role.
So let's come all the way back to Ted Ginn because Ted Ginn still can return punts.
Yes, he can.
And what is the deal? Is he a horrible wide receiver? Is he serviceable?
No, he's a straight line runner.
He is a
which makes him a pretty bad route runner.
Okay,
you know, so he can't run all the routes, and he's of little use to a quarterback if you can only pigeonhole him in certain positions and run him a few routes. But like I said yesterday, if you can steal 12 to 15 reps of him at wide receiver, and 20 or we'll say 15 of him returning and making good decisions, if he returns, you know, two touchdowns, a punt or a kickoff for a touchdown at any point in a season, he's added value to your roster in my eyes.
Okay.
At a minimal number.
So that's very interesting.
Yes.
So as a wide receiver, and remember now, he was a pretty high pick when he went to Miami, wasn't he?
Yes.
He was in 8?
First, yeah.
Was he? I mean, he's
I think he might have been 7.
7 or 8,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, he went to Miami. Wasn't that the year Brady Quinn?
Yes,
was sitting in the room and went, wow, that was a surprise, right?
Yes.
When he thought he might go to Miami. All right. Anyway, now, what I have not brought the point in that I don't think it's bad for local guys to play for the Browns.
Right.
All right? I thought Jurevicius got it when he played here. He didn't play here long, but I thought he got it. I think LeCharles Bentley probably would have definitely gotten it, but he never got a chance to play.
Right.
All right? I think Zastadil got it
when
he was punting for the Browns. I think Dante Whitner gets it.
He does.
I think Hoyer more than gets it.
Yes, he does.
He got a full dose of it last year. And so I don't think it's a bad thing. And so many times people have come to me and said, you know, these players come into the Browns and they don't get the Browns. They don't understand it. They don't understand the history and the tradition. And you're right, okay? But the fact of the matter is, if you have guys that do automatically because of their birth certificate, then I think that helps you.
It does.
I think a player sitting in a locker room and saying, hey, listen, I get this. I get why this Pittsburgh game means everything to this city and to this crowd and to what's going to be the mood of this city tomorrow on Monday, pending the result of this game. I think that's even more effective than a coach standing up there and showing vintage video of Jim Brown.
It's just like an Ohio boy going to Ohio State and understanding that Ohio State-Michigan rivalry.
Well, there you go.
I get it.
Yeah, okay. Those are some hot topics. I feel like we should ask for the offertory hymn. I think like we've given a sermon here. Jason, play the offertory hymn, and we'll be back with more at Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, here on ESPN 850 WKNR.